We are all still learning how all this works. So let's begin by going through and determining who's here. The chair is going to call out the names that appear to him. And if you are a member of the committee and do not hear your name, complete the list. If you will, please speak up so we can correct that. But simply in order as they appear on the screen, I see Representative Larry Strickland, Chairman Darren Jackson, Representative Allison Dahl, Representative Mark Brody, Representative Carson Smith, Representative Frank Eiler, Representative Holly Grange, Representative Pricey Harrison, Representative John Torbett, Representative Sarah Stevens, Representative Shelley Willingham, Representative Elmer Floyd, Representative Greer Martin, those members that the chair can see at this time. If we did not call your name, would you activate your microphone and let us know that you're here, please?
Chairman Joe John, I can see you all. Hear you. Maybe you can't see me.
Representative John, I can see you now. Thank you for speaking up, sir.
This is John Bell. I'm present in the committee room myself.
Good afternoon, Chairman Bell. I don't believe there's a need to go through with an identification of the staff that's present. I will point out that Ann Luck, our clerk, is here. Request to speak. If you can just send those up to her, we'll address that the same way we have in prior meetings. The chair will begin with just a brief overview, and then we'll recognize Chairman Jackson, Chairman Bell, and remarks they'd like to offer. Members, what you should have before you, this was sent to you in advance, and Erica Churchill is going to put it up on the screen in just a moment, but you have this does not look like a normal bill that we would consider in a committee. What we're going to do is get these ideas out there and get feedback and, from this group before we direct the staff to write the bill. So you should have received that. If you didn't, please email Dylan. Real Neil.Eanman at NCLEG, and they to you if you are a member of the meeting. Before we recognize Erica Churchill to begin going through this list, Chairman Jackson, would you like to add anything at this point, sir?
No, thank you, Chairman Lewis.
Chairman Bell?
No, thank you.
Very good. Then we will now move into issues impacting government operations. The way we're going to proceed in just a moment, I'm going to recognize Ms. Churchill, and I'm going to ask her to go through each item that it has been sorted by the referral source. That means the person or people or entity that has asked us to consider this. I think we will go through each one of those one at a time, and then we'll stop and see if there's a broader concern about the group. So with that, Ms. Churchill, let's start with the request from the Secretary of State.
This is Erica, and let me see if I can figure out how to share this document with everybody. And so these are sorted not only by referral source, but by kind of a general topic area. The, as Chairman Lewis noted, the first three did come from the Secretary of State's office. And the very first one is regarding advanced healthcare directives. They maintain a registry of those. And right now, under current law, in order to execute an advanced healthcare directive, such as the healthcare power of attorney, it requires a notary and two witnesses to sign off on the documents. As many of our elderly are in some sort of long-term care facility or a hospital but now have restricted access to visitors, the suggestion was to potentially implement an allowable for either a notary or two witnesses to sign off on the documents. Mr. Chair, do you want to go through each issue individually, or would you like to do this as a group from the Secretary of State's office?
Let's take this one first, and then we'll move on to the next two. Mr. Churchill, just a quick question from the chair here. Is this change only being proposed during this time of crisis, or is this something that the Secretary has asked for as a permanent change?
I believe that came in, it would be for this emergency only. That is probably a consideration for the committee with respect to each one of these, whether or not it is something that is specific to this particular COVID-19 emergency, whether it is something that might be applicable in any emergency, or whether it is something that simply needs to be changed about the underlying law.
Very good. Members, with the understanding that this is request from the Secretary, it would allow two witnesses to sign these advanced healthcare directives in lieu of having a notary also during this time of crisis. Does any member have a question on this? Chair is not seeing anyone recognition, so feel free to speak up.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, it's Pricey Harrison.
Yes, ma'am, you're recognized.
Thank you, and I think I had a question similar to yours, whether these were going to have a sunset or are we going to decide that with respect to each one, like specifically with regard to this, will this sunset, and how are we defining the crisis? Are we going to do that later?
That's a very valid question. The reason that I had asked that is that when we had discussed most of these before, it was with the idea that it was these changes would be effective for this particular declared state of emergency. So unless there's objection from the committee, let's just say that unless we state otherwise, that we're going to direct staff to limit this to this state of emergency, or perhaps we may broaden it later on to a declared state of emergency. But right now, we're just dealing with this particular period of time.
David.
Yes, sir. Representative Floyd.
In reference to Representative Price, the Price just stated, could we not mentioned, and that's up to Erica, she know more, that these statutes or requests would sunset 30 days after the state of emergency end, something to that effect.
Yes, that's exactly what we would do.
Thank you, sir.
So not seeing anyone else with a concern on this, the chair is going to assume that it would be okay to include this in a bill. Representative Dahl.
Yes, I noticed on like page, I think it's two, there's some notary requirements, changing to virtual notary and virtual notary online. And I know as a notary myself, that those are some changes that we have been trying to make estate closings and other things doing business easier. So I would wondering if we can get some clarification from the Secretary of State for those as to whether they wanted a sunset or not. I mean, I'm okay with a sunset. I just want to make sure we're not having to double duty if it's something that we all agree on anyways.
Makes sense. The chair is going to recommend that we stay focused on this immediate crisis that we face. And then if there is an idea, a reform that comes up that seems to be, you know, gosh, we should have done this a long time ago, I think the General Assembly would have time to act on that when it turns. So let's
Chairman Lewis.
Representative Stevens, and then Harrison, and then Torbett.
Hey, this is Representative Stevens. I just was making the same suggestion that Representative Floyd made, and that is that these are under the emergency declaration, and that they only that they be lifted within 30 or 60 days after the declaration's lifted. So I didn't necessarily have to be heard again.
And Representative Harrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also wanted to add, and I'm not sure if it would come up here or if there's some other place in here, about making the same change with respect to wills, because we're hearing concerns about estate attorneys getting the two witnesses and notary for wills. Can we make it not just for health directives, advanced health care directives, but also wills during the state of emergency?
Representative Jackson, do you want to weigh in on that?
Representative Lewis, I'm happy to weigh in too. It's Representative Stevens.
Okay. Let's hear from Chairman Jackson first, and then we'll go right back to you.
Chairman Lewis, I didn't hear Representative Harrison's question.
Let's do this. Would you just repeat what you asked, Representative, and that way we get it? I will have to enter.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Jackson, I was asking if we could expand the same leniency to wills, because it seems often advanced health care directives and wills are being done at this performed at the same time and during the state of emergency. Could we provide that same relief for wills as well as advanced health care directives?
Representative Harrison, I wouldn't have an objection to that. There might be some on the call who may have an objection to that due to some of the very sensitive, the nature of how sensitive some of these documents you're drafting, including end of life planning and things of that nature are. One of the questions that I also had is, I agree that we should make all these changes good for 30 or 60 days after the emergency is, has ended. But my question would be, if someone had one of these documents prepared during this time and they were happy with it, would it still be valid after the emergency was over if it did not comply with current law, or would they have to go back and get it redrawn? And so I think that's something we need to consider when we're drafting.
Representative Stevens, did you want to be heard on this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to answer Representative Harrison's question more directly. In North Carolina, a will does not have to be witnessed, period. It can be entirely in the person's own handwriting, and then that's legal. It can be witnessed by only two people, and that's completely legal. The reason we do the notary and two witnesses is after someone's dead, then it doesn't require the witnesses to fill out some affidavit for probate purposes. It's called self-proving will. So I don't know that it's necessarily needed for wills, because all you have to do is have witnesses to the will anyway. You don't have to have that notary.
Well, thank you.
So the chair is going to suggest this. If we could ask our staff just to make a note that we want to take a look at perhaps wills, but a as far as the advanced care directives, with the idea that's going, this idea is going to sunset, is there any other conversation on that point?
Chairman Lewis?
Representative Torbett, the chair apologizes. The gentleman is recognized.
Yeah, the only concern is that in speaking with Mr. Gurley earlier about the sunsetting, we concur with the sunset. Our concern is that when a full stop is issued at the end of the emergency declaration, just how long does it take to actually get stopped, specific transportation / DMV? So we're trying to evaluate what that time period would be needed to make that best for both citizen as well as the department. It may not be, it may be longer than 30, it may be longer than 60, it may be longer than 90. We're trying to come up with that number as we speak. So I appreciate that a blanket 30-day or 60-day not be issued for all the things that we'll be addressing.
Anyone else want to be heard on this matter? If not, Ms. Churchill, would you please move on?
Yes. The next one from the Secretary of State's office as well regarding business registrations and their annual report fees. The request is to consider waiving those annual report fees. I will say that this may be caught up in a bigger issue that's a little bit near the end of the list regarding reg reform. But this one would be very specific to the LLCs, the corporations, the other entities that are required to file with the Secretary of State's office.
So, Mr. Churchill, the chair will start on this one too. The secretaries, only talking about the businesses for whom the renewal comes up during the declared crisis, or would this be for all of 2020?
Again, Mr. Chair, I believe that would be a policy decision for the General Assembly. Based on the prior discussion, I think our initial drafting perspective would be only during the period of the emergency declaration, plus some sort of window afterwards.
Representative Stevens on this matter.
Thank you. And I was just sort of in the same vein that you were asking, is are we talking about waiving these? Are we talking about delaying the due date they're in? We talked about delaying them for all businesses for the rest of this year. What about those that paid from January through the end of April? I think we've got some devil in the details on that issue. And the question is how. It's normally not a tremendous annual report fee. I think it's maybe $100, which would be helpful, I'm sure, to businesses, but is it something we need to do, and is it fair to everybody?
Ms. Churchill, do you know the total amount of the fees that I think it's $250 for certain businesses and could be 100 for like Representative Stevens says. Do we have the total amount of money that we're talking about here? I guess that would, you would only have that on an annual basis if you have it at all.
Mr. Chair, I don't know that. I do believe we have some folks from fiscal that are on the conference call. They may have an answer for that, or that may just be something we need to get back to the group with.
All right. Is anyone from fiscal on the call that has an answer to that? If not, then we may have to return to that.
Mr. Chairman, this is Karen from fiscal.
Yes, ma'am.
I don't have the exact amount related to the business registration, but I do know that in the Secretary of State's entire budget, the amount of fees are relatively small. And I can get that detail if folks are interested in it, but I do know that it does not account for very much in that overall budget.
All right, so Representative Dahl was letting us know via message that it's $220 for the organization that she files for. Is there anyone else who'd like to be heard? Because I think we're going to put this one to the side until we get a little information. Ms. Churchill, please proceed.
Yes, sir. The next is charitable solicitations. Right now, there is a 10-day statutory turnaround for the division of the charitable solicitation division to review an application. They would simply like to extend that to a 20-day turnaround, essentially because the employees are now working from home and it takes a little longer with the social distancing requirements. I would assume this would be only during the emergency and for some time period thereafter.
And what exactly are they reviewing?
It's an application to do a charitable solicitation for fundraising, as I understand it.
Anyone like to be heard on this particular issue? If not, the chair's going to assume that's a good thing. And Churchill, will you proceed?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Our next is regarding communicable disease information. This one came to the group as a recommendation or a referral from by the school of government for items they are seeing. Again, I am not the expert in communicable disease information, but as I understand it, HIPAA law is actually a little more flexible on disclosures to law enforcement regarding who has and who does not have a particular communicable disease. State law is more restrictive. The suggestion from the school government would be to align the more restrictive state law with the more flexible HIPAA law so that law enforcement could be a little more in the loop regarding what might be necessary to prevent or lessen a serious and imminent threat, and also to make sure that the law enforcement officers had some idea who had or didn't have when they were arresting or that type of nature, what they individually have been exposed to.
This matter, does anyone from the committee wish to be heard? We're going to assume that's, at least for right now, is okay. Mr. Churchill, if you're please proceed.
Yes, sir. The next two come from the Department of Transportation. One would be to authority to extend the expiration deadlines for various privileges, such as your driver's license, your vehicle inspection, that type of thing during the declared emergency. And the second would be to allow authority to waive the fines and fees for failure to do those things during a declared emergency.
Representative Torbett, is one of the transportation chairs, do you have thoughts you might want to share on this? Any other member like that?
Good to go, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other member like that?
Chairman Lewis, this is Frank Howler.
Or Representative Howler.
My only concern is the time period, how long it will be waived. And also, I've gotten calls about the inspections. That was a particular problem. So I'm all for this. It's just, what time period, at the end of the emergency, or just how long he could waive it for, I guess would be the devil in the details.
The chair suggests perhaps that we think of this, so we ask Ms. Whenever we're talking about limiting time, we ask our staff to direct the language to how we normally write bills regarding hurricanes. There's a time period that we put in there that might be a good proven model that we can use. But would anyone else like to be heard on this one?
Mr. Chairman. No.
Yes, sir. The gentleman's recognized.
Yeah, just this goes back to what I was saying earlier, that we're still doing a little bit of evaluation on what we feel a suitable time period would be at the end of that full stop on emergency declaration.
Understood.
Mr. Chairman, Joe John.
Representative John, gentleman's recognized.
Thank you. I have a question as to whether the extensions are for everybody, or does the DMV commissioner have a discretion to pick and choose among folks seeking extensions or waiver fines and fees? And I
not to be clear one way or the other. Ms. Churchill, can you or any of our staff address Representative John's question?
Representative Lewis, we're happy to have it, however the committee votes. The request was for the commissioner to have the authority to extend deadlines or waive those fines and fees. If the committee desires to have it by category, that everyone in a particular category, that would be waived or that deadline extended, we can draft it as that such. If they would prefer that the commissioner have some flexibility that way as well.
Mr. Chairman, this is Representative Stevens.
Ladies recognized.
Thank you. I was questioning what fines and fees might be waived. Are we talking about speeding fines? Are we talking about DWIs? Are we talking about fines and fees that are assessed in a court action, or simply those that are directly assessed by the DMV commissioner? And I think that's a big difference.
The chair would say that it's the chair's understanding these would be DMV assessed fees, like failure to renew your license plate on time. Is that right, Ms. Churchill? That's what we're talking about.
Yes, Mr. Chair. As we understand it, it would only be those things that are under the commissioner's authority now. And I don't believe the commissioner has authority to impose court fines.
So with that understanding, I believe the two items there, DMV commissioner authority to extend the expiration date and to waive fines, are kind of the same thing. Does anyone have concern with that, at least in principle?
Chair.
Yes, sir.
You know, at some point in time, you know, we have to go with a sunset, because with the fees, you know, given the state that we are in now, we are going to need every source of revenue possible in order to move into 2020 and you know, as we prepare our budget. So it need to be some type of sunset, you know, within all of these provisions.
Understood. Let's see, Representative Stevens, did the lady wish to add anything else? All right. So we're going to say those two are okay. The idea they're going to be a sunset and just for the fees that the DMV can impose. Ms. Churchill, you want to move on to chapter 163?
Yes, sir. The next two are both elections related, both about the traditional mail-in absentee ballot request only. The first would be to expand the options to return that absentee request to include fax and email, not just traditional personal in-hand delivery or the traditional snail mail delivery. The second would be to allow a HAVA document to be returned with that absentee ballot request form in lieu of the driver's license or the date of birth, just in case someone didn't have that. HAVA documents would be a utility bill or something of that nature that had the person's name and address on it.
The chair would point out that in conversations with the state board, these requests would only apply to elections that are held during this time of the emergency. If the General Assembly wants to consider a larger package of reforms later on, they could certainly do that. So these two things would apply to the Congressional District 11 runoff, and I believe we have a local election somewhere in the east.
Yes, sir. This county, I believe.
So with the idea that we're only talking about this limited time, does anyone have concern with these two?
One question for Erica, sir, and I have my last question.
Please proceed, Representative Floyd.
Erica, what about the readable ID?
So I believe that under litigation is on hold for 2020.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else?
Mr. Chair, it's Pricey.
Yes, ma'am. The lady is recognized.
Thanks. And I had several questions related to this. It's my expectation that we might have some disruption through the November election. So I would hope that we would go beyond the special elections of Congressional District 11 and the county revote and think about changes we might need to be making if this flu runs its course but reappears. This virus. So I would like for us just as a policy matter to think about that. And I had specific questions to these changes. There had been discussions by Ms. Brinson Bell about expanding poll workers who might not live in the precinct but live in the county. Poll worker pay, the statute, I did not realize how low the fee was in the statute. And I was wondering about those requests that she made specifically that I think would apply to even the special elections. And I had a couple other questions. I don't know if you want to respond to that or if I should just go through my list.
Why don't you go ahead and go through your list?
Thank you. And I know that there was discussion about there will be a separate appropriations bill because I recall that there was some HAVA money and some CARES money that we could match and draw down. And I just wanted a reminder about whether there was going to be a separate appropriations package with this or as part of this COVID relief package, and we're just doing policy. And then separately, as far as making it easier for folks to get to the to get absentee ballots in this time of social distancing and staying at home, did we talk about a phone request? I can't remember what you need to do to have an absentee ballot request, but I can't remember if there was a possibility that somebody could make a phone request for an absentee ballot. And if we were going to do something about the witnesses on the absentee ballot. I think right now you have to have two if you are self-isolating and you can't get two. Were we considering some relief there? Thanks.
The chair will take a stab at some of those and we'll come right back to them. On the Help America Vote Act funds, it is the chair's understanding there is going to be conversation regarding another appropriations bill to try and draw those funds down. The chair is not personally aware that a phone request for an absentee has been made. I will say that, you know, these are pretty much sort of low hanging fruit. I certainly would be glad to include Representative Harrison and all other interested members in discussion of overall reforms. But right now, these are the ones that we think are the most urgent.
Could I follow up?
Please.
I realize that what we're trying to do here is expedite the non-controversial proposals. I did think that there was some merit to the fact that there might be difficulty finding poll workers. And if it could be expanded to be a county resident, I think there's probably some validity to having it broader than that. But it does seem like it might be restrictive if we're just limiting poll workers to just those in precinct. I just think the committee might want to consider that. That seemed like a pretty simple request from the state board.
Speaking only for my opinion, I agree with you, and I've met the list. That's one of the things that we'll try to get back to.
Thank you.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for the chair and then a comment after that. Right now, to get absentee ballot, you can request it by mail or go by and pick it up. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Okay. So by allowing the request to come in email or fax, basically that absentee ballot could be sent to wherever. It's not a family member picking it up, or it's not somebody from where the ballot, where the people live, is mailed to them. How are we going to ensure against fraud?
Representative Smith, it's the chair's understanding that the way the ballot is, that the request form, if you will, is not changing. It's just the way the form can be sent in. The form now could still be sent in to, you know, if I were to request one for my son to be mailed to his dorm at Chapel Hill, I could do that now. Now I have to do it by putting a stamp on an envelope and mailing it in. I could use the same form if this were to, if this were to become law, and fax it in instead, or email in the request. It doesn't change who can ask for the form or how they can ask for it, or where it can be sent. It just changes for this election, or this time period, how the request can be sent in to the board. It will still be subject to the same reviews. And Ms. Churchill, if I misspoke, please.
I believe that is absolutely correct. And I would remind the committee that the request is to receive the application and ballots. It is the application that needs to be completed and returned with the voted ballot. That application is the determination of whether or not it is a valid voter, not the request form to receive it.
The gentleman's recognized.
Thank you. Just real quick, we are, I think when you started this off, you were speaking just for this second primary, or as long as this emergency situation lasts. I know there were some comments about extending it, but if I were to go to the second primary or right now, I think that's about as far as I could go. Thank you.
Sir. Anyone else seeking recognition on this issue, or these two, I should say? All right, if not, we'll move on. Ms. Churchill, yes, 35A.
So, Mr. Chair, our next two issues came from our friends at the School of Government who had noticed these issues. They're both related to or directly impacting incompetency and adult guardianship provision proceedings. The first issue is about service on that potentially incompetent adult that needs guardianship. And right now, service requires it to be personally delivered to that respondent, as some of the adults are often in long-term care facilities or in hospitals. The sheriff's office can't get in to actually complete service. The suggestion from the school government is just for the duration of this public health crisis to allow for another type of service on these particular respondents. I believe one of the suggestions might have been to simply leave the proceeding documents with a stated person that is noted on the service documents by the deputy attempting service to say that it was left at X facility with Y person. The next item related to incompetency and adult guardianship is that the proceedings require the respondent to be there. Right now, there is some ability for a remote hearing via video conference on the appointment of an interim guardian if the clerk determines good cause exists. The suggestion was to consider allowing more video conferencing so that the respondent wouldn't need to be removed from any type of long-term care facility or otherwise jeopardize their own health or anyone in the clerk's office.
Member wishing to be heard on this issue?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Floyd, gentleman's recognized.
Erica, when you say with a person, that could be anyone within that facility. Could it be narrowed down to someone in supervisory capacity or something of that nature?
Yes, sir, it could.
Thank you.
Anyone else likes to, anyone else want to be heard on this one? Let's move on to the next one there.
The next two also come from our friends at the School of Government. They involve involuntary commitment. Involuntary commitments require some sort of process where the individual respondent is brought before a magistrate and then transported by law enforcement to a facility. And then after that, there are commitment and examinations that are generally face-to-face. The two suggestions are simply for the period of the pandemic or the public health crisis to allow for a different transportation mode, as many of the long-term care facilities are wanting to limit the number of people coming and going from their facilities to try to work out something other than just law enforcement doing that transportation. And the second item would be, again, to allow for video conferencing for those examinations in lieu of face-to-face, some sort of telemedicine.
Any member wishing to be heard on this one? All right, what's the next one?
Our next two items come from the Local Government Commission. The first is there is a school capital outlay report that is due on May 1st. They believe that will need a delay to July 1st, definitely for 2020, possibly to 2021 due to late filings. The second thing is local government finance related. All of the units of local government have a daily deposit requirement. I believe it's $500 in cash. Anything above that, it has to go to a financial institution that day. They believe that some form of temporary relief to either increase the amount of money or the number of days it could be held, given that some of the financial institutions are beginning to limit the number of folks coming into the financial institution, as well as the number of employees available to do things in the office in the local government level, because they're also working from home as much as they can.
Any questions or comments on these ideas?
Mr. Chairman, this is Dean Arp.
Representative Arp, gentleman's recognized.
Could you, Ms. Churchill, explain again what the delay in the capital request report is about? I may have heard that wrong.
Mr. Chair, if I might, I think that one is simply timing, simply because so many employees at the local government level are involved in responding to the emergency, and also delays with the teleworking and other things that are going on in response to the emergency, that the local government commission just thought they might need an extension from May 1st to July 1st.
Okay.
All right. That clear up that matter. Anyone else wish to be heard on this? All right, let's move on.
Our next two are with regards to the marriage licenses that are issued by the Register of Deeds. And both of these came to us from the Register of Deeds Association folks. The first is the requirement for a personal appearance for applicants seeking a marriage license. With that, obviously, with the social distancing, mass gatherings, trying to work from home, the personal appearance issue has become an issue within the Register of Deeds office. Their suggestion would be to allow video conferencing, provided that they can still prove who the applicants are. The next issue is the length of the marriage license. By statute, that is 60 days. Obviously, with social distancing and mass gathering restrictions, occasionally the 60 days is not enough to figure out how to carry out a wedding right now. The suggestion would be for a temporary period, extend that 60-day expiration to something greater. They did not give a length of time.
The chair would suggest maybe we go back to them and see if 120 days would work. Does anyone else have any thoughts on this one?
Mr. Chairman, Joe John.
Representative John, gentleman's recognized.
Thank you. Ms. Churchill, Has there been any issue raised about the actual performance of the wedding ceremony, whether that?
Mr. Chair, if I might, Representative John, this issue came to us from the Register of Deeds. So I don't know that they have any, they didn't have, give us any commentary regarding the actual officiants of the marriage. They were just simply saying that the 60 days may not be long enough given what the situation is with the social distancing and the mass gatherings.
Representative John, is your concern that a license may have been issued and they're not be able to get married during the time? Was that your concern, or were you asking about expanding who can actually perform the marriages? And Representative John, I think we might have accidentally hit mute on your account there. Can't hear you.
I did. Thank you. My focus was not on exactly on either one of the issues. It's more the actual marriage ceremony itself with social distancing and all. Has there been any discussion, and perhaps maybe this committee, I leave that to the chairs, on to consider a provision for limited social distance ceremonies? I don't know.
In the chair's experience, most of the limiting of how close you stand occurs after you get married. You can look into that. Representative Stevens, did you wish to be heard on this?
Yes, thank you. One of the things my Register of Deeds said to me was not only for licenses that are issued going forward, but for licenses that have probably been issued the previous 60 or 90 days, that a lot of those people got them in good faith and then couldn't get married, had to postpone their wedding because of the social distancing. So this one needs to be made a little bit retroactive, and exactly how far back retroactive, that would be something I'm sure the Register of Deeds would have input about.
Yes, the chair thinks that makes sense, and I thought that's where they were trying to go to. So, Ms. Churchill, I'm sure you heard that concern. Anyone else like to be heard on this issue?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Flores.
I have a question. Perhaps Representative Stevens or someone can answer. In response to Representative Joe, is that a person was in the process of getting married, the court, because of the decision that had been made to postpone it. She need to get divorced and other to remarry. So they're sort of running parallel with each other. So is that something that Representative Joe was talking about?
I'm not sure I understood what you asked, so let's try this again.
Okay. That the young lady was in the process, everything is set for her to receive her divorce. Once she is divorced, she ordered, then she wants to remarry. Both of these are running parallel with each other. Now that the court have delayed this, then there is some type of confusion there. And so how would that have an effect on her divorce as it relates to her getting remarried? I guess she's going to remarry shortly thereafter.
Representative Lewis, would you like your domestic goddess to answer that?
Please, ma'am.
Representative Floyd, this is Representative Stevens. She still has to get divorced before she can get married. What we're talking about is the marriage license is only good for 60 days and it automatically expires. So we're talking about extending her marriage license beyond that, and it would be beyond the date in which the court goes back. And when the court goes back, they're going to want to do those uncontested divorces first because they're quick. So she still has to get both things done, but we're trying to make her not have to pay double and triple to refile divorces or to refile the marriage license.
Thank you.
All right, so I think everybody's okay with that. I don't see anybody else seeking recognition, so let's move on.
Mr. Chair, the next item also came to us from the school government, and they recognize the notaries, the remote notarization issue that I believe Representative Dahl mentioned earlier. We understand the Secretary of State's office has considered this at some point. I believe the General Assembly may have considered it at some point. And pretty much what the school government is saying is that without some address of the issue, any real estate instrument and other documents requiring a notary that are notarized remotely during this public health emergency could be challenged. And what the school government suggested was to ask the Secretary of State's office for a recommendation. If the committee would like, we are happy to reach out to the Secretary of State's office to see if they have thoughts about how remote notarization could be conducted in this state so that you don't end up with the documents being challenged simply on a procedural matter.
Representative Lewis.
Representative Stevens.
Thank you. There is currently an ability to do an e-notary without people having to be there. This is an issue that we've been working on with the e-courts filing, and this is an issue that real estate attorneys are dealing with. My sister is a real estate attorney, and so this is one we're willing to work on. The biggest issue is going to be the devil in the details of maintaining the dignity at the same time that we do this online procedure. Other states have done it, and we're looking at those. There are actually even groups that do it where, you know, you can submit some form of verification, and then they can provide the notarization. So it is one we need to work on. The question is exactly the devil in the details.
Let's do this. Chair is going to ask Mr. Churchill to reach out to the Secretary of State and get their thoughts on that, and we'll report back the next time this committee meets on this particular.
Yes, sir. We'll be glad to do that.
Let's move on.
Our next group come from a combination of the Secretary of State's office, the Register of Deeds, and the school government, and they all relate to the commission that a notary has to have in order to operate in the state. And they're all basically kind of coming around two things, either extending the amount of time it takes to complete the notary commission requirements, get re-notarized or do your renewal, take your oath of office. And secondly, with respect to that oath, to allow the Register of Deeds some ability to do that via video conferencing, provided that the applicant, the notary, can actually prove who they are before the Register of Deeds.
Representative McNeil on this issue.
Sorry, mine's, I put that in before you moved on. I just wanted to, while we were dealing with this notary issue, there are several different notaries that are required through the sheriff's office and concealed carry permits and pistol purchase permits. And I just wanted to make sure that, you know, when we're looking into this notary situation, that we include a look at that also.
That certainly is noted, the additional requirements for the notary. In terms of the idea of moving the expiration date and allowing more time to be sworn in, any concern with those? Not, we'll put a check mark by them and allow them 9 months to get sworn in, put a check mark by that. As far as being able to take your oath by audio, video communication, any concern with that? Again, we're talking about notaries, put a check mark by that. Notary should be allowed to renew within 18 months. Any concern with that? All right. Ms. Churchill, you'll move on to chapter 150B.
Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry, who's?
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith, the gentleman's recognized.
I'm sorry, when I read this, it looks like that the 6 to 9 months to complete the it looks like the 6 to 9 months to complete the commission is something they want to maybe make permanent. And then the notary expiration dates is just during the pandemic, or just maybe some clarification on that, please.
All right, so the chair is going to say that we're going to make all of this applied during this pandemic, and if we want to extend it beyond that, then we can do that when we return under normal. Sir.
Okay, thank you.
Answers. Anyone else on those issues? If not, Ms. Churchill, you have the floor to continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our next two come to us from the Office of Administrative Hearings. One related to contested cases. They would like for some relief given to the chief administrative law judge for during times of catastrophic conditions to be able to extend the time period for filing a petition for a contested case. The second coming from the Office of Administrative Hearings is related to emergency rules. And they would like to clarify the ability to reschedule meetings during the emergency temporary rulemaking process. I am not our rules expert, but as I understand it, during the permanent rulemaking process, there is an ability to reschedule these meetings. And OAH is just simply wanting the same authority with respect to emergency and temporary rulemaking.
All right. Questions on either of these? If not, we'll move on to our Article 33.
Yes, sir. So starting at the bottom of page 3 of the list, running over almost all the way through page 4, are issues related to open meetings and clarifying how some sort of simultaneous communication can be used to clearly conduct an open meeting. Most of this is coming from the County Commissioners Association, the League, the Local Government Commission, the School of Government, all acknowledging that, especially with respect to counties and cities, there is uncertainty in the statutes right now about how a county or a city can conduct a remote meeting and the validity of the actions taken during that meeting. Part of those issues are driven by the fact that under the county and city statutes, it mentions in their voting statutes that they are need to be physically present to count towards a quorum. If you can't get a quorum, you can't take action. And the request is simply to clarify that. Again, I think this is probably one where the committee would need to make some decision about whether whatever authorization was given to allow for remote meetings, whether or not that applied simply for this particular public health crisis, whether it would apply during any declaration of emergency, or whether it would be a general authorization. I would note this issue has probably been out there and discussed for well over a decade.
What the chair might suggest and move us along here, of course, we're open up to the committee as well. Perhaps we could ask the Association of County Commissioners and the League to give us sort of a template or an idea for how they would see this language being written, and then we could consider it the next time we meet. I think to be consistent, the chair would suggest that we do limit this to this particular emergency, but if it's successful, it may be something that the General Assembly wishes to apply to future emergencies as well. With that, are there any members that would like to be heard on this issue?
Hi, this is Representative Stevens.
Ladies recognize.
Thank you. My concern and my comment here is we've got at least a couple of different issues in little towns throughout our county that involve some areas of controversy. And they were attempting to hold a remote meeting, but limiting the people who could object, the people who could make some comments. You were limited to what you could fit in a slot of 35 words. I think we have to have some provision in there when it is a controversial issue and it's more, and it involves more people than could safely appear at the public meeting, that they need to wait until they can hold a public meeting to do that. I think it's not an area where we want them to take controversial issues that involve public comment and simply sort of do them remotely.
Makes sense. Makes sense there. Anyone else on this particular, on these three?
Sarah, Mr. Chair.
Representative Floyd.
To Sarah Stevenson, Representative Stevens.
Yes, sir.
Could this be non-controversial issues?
I would think non-controversial issues, if the public's not made it known they want to be heard, I don't think there's any problem with proceeding with this. But sometimes the city doesn't know that it's controversial until they put it out there.
But once the city find out that it's controversial, then you know, they should not have it being remote. But either way, you know, I think whatever.
With these three, there are some concerns and questions Churchill pointed out that's been talked about for quite some time. Why don't we ask them what they had in mind and come back to this one next time? Let's go ahead to, I believe we're down now. I'm sorry, let me make sure I'm not missing anybody. Great, all right. So the open meetings law, that would go along with the.
Yes, sir. All the open meetings provisions would kind of go together. So I think kind of getting some information back from the county commissioners and the league is our instructions as staff. And that would put us down at the bottom of page 4, the regulatory relief items. And I am going to turn my piece of this over to Jeff Hudson, who is also on this call, to talk the committee through that.
All right.
This is Corbett.
Professor, you recommend.
The only way I could support something like this, if we could tailor the language down to that, if it was a governmental directive that you could not have public associations or like we have now, where there's a separation notice involved, then I would be supportive of this. But just over the common declaration of emergency that might be specific to one part of the state or the other, I would not be supportive of across the board change. Thank you.
Mr. Hudson, let's move on with the regulatory relief part of this.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Jeff Hudson from the Legislative Analysis Division. The next three items are all related. What you've been talking about so far is largely specific state entities and specific requests. Concern that there are a number of other state agencies, for instance, occupational licensing boards, that you may not have heard from, and that they also need some look at either directing them or giving them the discretion to do things like waive fees or fines or delay fees or fines, to delay continuing education requirements, to delay some licensing requirements. You can approach it any way you want as far as that, but that's the general idea behind the three items at the bottom of page 4.
Any comment or question on these three?
Mr. Chairman.
Brody. Representative Brody, the gentleman's recognized.
Mr. Chairman, I think was mentioned we need to get a little bit more input from the occupational licensing boards on dealing with this. I just had a conversation with the general contractor board this morning, and he brought that up. So I just want to recommend that. The other thing I have a question is, we're dealing with a lot of state agencies, permits, et cetera, but a lot of permits are issued on the local level also. And is there a way to incorporate this kind of language to include those local permitting situations?
Yes, there is. And unless there's tremendous objection from the committee, that makes sense to the chair. When we say state, we probably should say state and local.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a follow-up on that, if I may.
Gentleman's recognized.
The language says either authorize or require. I think that also might need to be tightened up to decide which one or the other that we want to do. It's imperative sometimes that somebody has a permit and they've got a lot of money, everything invested in this thing. And we can't fall to the mercy of somebody to say, well, we'll think about doing that. We either are going to do it or not. It's just for another thing for thought as we move forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Harrison is recognized. Representative Harrison, you want to try that again?
I think I'm having some difficulty. I'm going to type my question. Sorry.
So we'll move to Representative McNeil, and then the chair will read Representative Harrison's question when it comes through.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I know this information might not be readily available, but we're looking at either waiving, delaying, modifying. Do we have any idea of what the economic impact of this is going to be? I know that might be hard to come by.
Mr. Hudson, do you, anyone on our fiscal staff, have any idea what this impact could be?
This is Jeff Hutz from Legislative Analysis. I've been hearing a lot of feedback, so I'm not quite clear on the question, but if the question involves the economic impact of this type of provision, it would depend on the scope of how it's drafted, how we're directed to draft it. So if it's going to apply to all state agencies and all of their fees, I expect it would have a very significant impact. If we're directing them to do it, if we give them discretion to do it, where they're looking at their bottom line and also providing relief, that would probably have less impact, because they would be able to ascertain for themselves what's doable for them and their programs. As you know, a number of state programs and agencies are fee supported, so they would probably have to look at that. But again, it depends ultimately on the scope of how the committee would want this prepared.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the whole idea of this is regulatory relief for the people that are affected by this. And the way this is, and I guess it's intentionally so that we can make a decision on whether we want to approve them to waive it, delay it, modify it in some other way. Worst case scenario, if we just said that we blanket allow them to do it all, you said it would have a significant economic impact. So what would that significant economic impact be if we just gave them authority to do everything?
Let's do this, Representative Neal. Let's see if we can. The chair is going to seem to sense the mood of the committee is that the idea would be to delay the collection of fees so that we treat everybody that's paying these fees the same. Might not be able to make it to today, but when the state reopens for business, you ought to be able to make your fee. So let's go with the idea that we're going to delay the fees as far as the waiving of any educational or exam requirements. That may be one where it'll need to be delayed as well, as opposed to waived. Representative Dodd, did you wish to comment on this?
I'd just like to see us delay these fees as opposed to waiving them, because they're on a rolling. Most of the fees are on a rolling. So I may have paid mine in January when the world was good, and then we're going to waive somebody's in February. We're going to get into a mess. And I think if we delay them, even if we delay them with collection as well, you know, allowing them to pay that fee on a payment plan or something, but I just don't think we can look the other way and just waive all these fees.
Makes sense.
Mr. Chairman, this is Mr. Chairman, this is Representative Arp. Yeah, and I apologize. I'm on by phone, so I'm in the dark here, look and not having a look. But Representative Turner and I, we were talking about many of these same issues, and one of the things that we were consistent with is that many of the boards, in light of waiving fees and so forth. Many of these fees for licensing boards are they're self-supporting, and the only income that they have are these. And so, if we mandate that they waive the fees, it puts many of these boards in jeopardy fiscally, and there's not a mechanism for the state to respond to them to bail them out with making up a short. Term shortfalls in their income related to fees and so forth. I just think the broadest scope possible is warranted in there. So that's kind of some of the background on some of the boards and so forth that I've been able to talk with.
Let's do this, Mr. Hudson, not to put you on the spot, but you and Mr. Churchill have done exact and staff done exactly what the chair has asked, which is to give kind of broad strokes and not any exact language. But I know you've obviously thought about this. Would you like to add any more clarity on this? Or are you able to do that at this point?
This is Jeff Hudson from Legislative Analysis. I guess I would just say that a number of these questions are valid questions. As the last member said, a number of the occupational license, well, actually all of the independent occupational licensing boards and a number of state agencies are either self-supporting or have some of their programs that are their fee supported only. So you just have to keep that in mind if you're going to mandate these kind of fee waivers, that you either are going to have boards and agencies that may not be able to perform their some of their functions, or the General Assembly may have to look at giving them some kind of appropriation backstop in order to keep them running. The other thing I would mention is a number of occupational licensing boards have already, under their existing authority, delayed continuing education. There's probably between 15 and 20 at this point that have already done something. Some of them, I think, are concerned that they may not have authority to do that under their current statutes. But what you might consider doing, rather than requiring all state agencies to waive all fees and delay all these things, is to give them the discretionary authority, even if you don't normally allow it, to allow them to do that.
And so, members, the chairman can read two comments into the record sent forward by Representative Harrison. She writes, quote, "I am concerned about DEQ regulations that are designed to protect the public health. I'm concerned about any requirement that DEQ be be required to waive, delay, or modify the collection of fees or fines. I would prefer that this be discretionary. Otherwise, you might end up with some bad acting. I see the need for regulatory relief, but I think these proposals are too broad for something like regulations protecting air and water quality. Further, Representative Harrison writes, I am concerned about the open meetings law, that there be a minimum standard for quality. I've heard from those who tried to follow some of these emergency meetings and run into audio and visual problems, garbled, not discernible, etc. I have been having technical difficulties and could not weigh in when the open meetings part was discussed, end quote. Chair certainly appreciates the lady's patience. So the chair is trying to absorb the comments that are coming in. It appears that we definitely are leaning more towards a delay and even an optional delay, perhaps empowering the boards to delay if they can and are able to do so. Is that sort of the broad consensus of the committee? All right, we're going.
Could you repeat that, please?
So what the chair is able to ascertain is that the committee seems inclined to authorize state agencies and boards to have the option to delay these fees or fines or even the training, but not in fact to waive them, and that be optional.
Chairman?
Yes, I hear someone seeking recognition.
Mark Brody, yeah.
Representative Brody, the gentleman's recognized.
Yes, sir, on the second one that, well, now everybody can see me here. On the second one, dealing with renewal of permits, and I brought in the local is I would say that we have to give more thought to having them decide if they want to delay it or not. Because if they delay it, some expire. And we got to also take into consideration that some people have acted on some of these already. So as we go forward on this, I think a little bit more concern about defining that delay or say, of course, we're just talking here, just say that they're mandatory delayed. Because of whatever circumstances. I mean, every one of these things has a circumstance behind it. So pretty hard to put them all in one pile. But I think we'll go, as we go forward on discussing it, I'd like to make sure we address that issue. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative McNeil is also sending a comment that he would support delay for state agencies and flexibility for boards. Delay should give 60 to 90 days to pay. The chair would suggest that we let Mr. Hudson continue to work on some draft language based on this feedback that he's just gotten, and then it'll be something for us to review. Representative McNeil, did you want to add anything else to what the chair just read?
Yeah, I think it seems to be there's two issues there with the regulatory relief. There's one's for state agencies and others for boards. After the emergency is over, after the pandemic, or you know, if someone has a fee or a fine or a late fee or something like that that they has been delayed, we should give them at least 60 to 90 days to pay that. And the flexibility for the boards, as was mentioned by another representative, I think is a great idea. They know specifically what their situations are, and I think they need the flexibility to deal with it.
Representative Harrison has also added, well, finally, I have concerns about the fact that there are no DPS fixes on this list. Secretary Hooks announced the potential early release of certain individuals, pregnancy within a few months of release, et cetera. I believe he indicated that he was constrained by certain statutory restrictions, like structured sentencing, et cetera. Is there something we can do to give DPS the flexibility it needs, allow for early release of those nonviolent individuals who would be eligible for release? Right now, it appears that our prisons are 8% over capacity. It would make sense to give DPS the discretion it needs to identify individuals who they consider appropriate early release. Here, we only add that this is something certain that we can consider and discuss as time goes forward. I will point out that the chairs did ask DPS what kind of language, exactly what kind of flexibility they wanted, and we've not heard back in writing from them yet. As soon as we get something more concrete to discuss, we'll be in a little better position to. Anyone else like to be heard on these issues?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Floyd, the gentleman's recognized.
In response to Representative Price, what you just mentioned, part of the secretary comments, I read somewhere that he was also talking about those who are sick. Now, that too will give to the local governmental agency an unfunded mandate to provide medical service for these individuals. So that's something that we have to take in consideration when we're looking at granting, you know, relief.
Mr. Chair, I'm back, and I think I've fixed my situation.
Ladies recognized.
Thank you, and I apologize for the disruption. I was sort of making sure that I got that added in before the meeting ended in case I couldn't comment, and I apologize for interrupting the flow. I just am thinking of the fact that we continue to report more COVID positive corrections officers and inmates who are housed in these correctional facilities, and it seemed like it would make sense when we heard him discuss that yes, we've got those who are eligible potentially for medical release, but and the pregnant women and others, and it just seemed like it might make sense if we could give them the flexibility they needed. But if I understand correctly, because I was trying to fix my devices, you said that the DPS did not ask for anything. Is that what you said?
What I said, Representative, I did hear the presentation that was made. We asked for further clarification from them what they want. To the best of my knowledge, have not received that. As soon as we do, we will be able to proceed a bit more.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brody.
Representative Brody, you're recognized.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question about this. Since we went down that road about releasing prisoners, is there a common thread or something that these prisoners are all the same as far as why they're in there in the first place? I mean, they're in there in the first place for a reason, but now we think that we need to release them. Is there something, a commonality to each of these prisoners, or are we just going to decide, okay, you, and you can go and you got to stay?
I think that would be what we're waiting for from the department. So let's say that we will come back to this when we get a little more clarification of what authority the secretary seeks here. Representative McNeil, did you want to be heard on this again, sir?
Well, I would just say that in their answer to Representative Brody's question, I think currently they're looking at females that are pregnant. They're also looking at population that's over 50, male and females. They're looking at people that are in there for like property crimes, no crimes against persons, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's mostly people over the age of 50. And in all cases, they're looking at people with release dates that are this year. Currently, as I understand it, they're not looking into any persons that were supposed to be released in 2021. Just this year. So the people that would be in the end or close to the end of their sentences. That's the best guidance I have so far as to exactly the criteria they're looking at.
All right, so we're going to pull this back in here to the ability to delay fees and fines, optional for state agencies. Any other comment on those subjects?
Mr. Chair, since I can, y'all probably appreciate the fact that I couldn't speak there for a while, but I, on this specific issue, and I appreciate your reading my concern into the record. Just when I read the language in here, the proposed language that talked about requiring the potential to require state agencies to waive fees. And I guess I just want to double check because I was in and out of hearing what was going on. Jeff is going to refine the language, going to include local permitting agencies. But it would concern me if this were broad brush, that it were sort of agency-wide, all state agencies, because some regulations and fees and fines that act as a disincentive for bad behavior. I think we need to be very careful when we go down that path. And I think that's the main point I wanted to make with regard to that. But I absolutely do see the need for regulatory relief when we've got this situation we're in. But I want us to think very carefully about any broad brush changes we make there and absolutely confine the period in which it's effective. Thank you.
Anyone else on these three? Chair doesn't see anyone else, so we're going to move ahead to the last page.
Mr. Chair, this is Erica again. Last page only has two remaining items. The first came from AOC for Rule 5 service. They would like to expand that for temporary relief to allow for an email as a proper method of service. Noted that service for the filings of pleadings and other papers, general conversation between attorneys in a litigation.
The chair has talked about this. I don't believe there was any, this is not the actual service of people, the initiating of a suit or whatnot. This is sort of the routine conversations between counsel and the filings between counsel. So where both counsel or all the counsel involved would have equal access to electronic communications. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Anyone on the committee wish to be heard on this one? All right. Check mark. And what's the final one on this page?
The final one on this particular list is from the treasurer's office, and it's with respect to the state health plan. Right now, by statute, health coverage ceases 30 days after non-payment. They would simply like, during the period of the public health emergency, to allow the treasurer to extend that time to receive payment, and the treasurer's authority would be subject to the approval of the state health plan board. The treasurer's office noted that a similar deferral has been approved by the Department of Insurance for private sector health insurance, but that does not apply to the state health plan.
Anyone like to be heard on this issue? Extending the time, increase the state health plan or former state employees the same way as it does non-state employees on private insurance. See here. We'll say we're good to go on that one. Members, we've gotten through this initial list. Obviously, we're all in different parts of the state and experiencing different requests from our constituents. And I don't want this thing to get too far off the rails here. If you do have something that you consider to be of an urgent nature that you would like the staff of this committee to begin working on, we can certainly share that now. And also, if it's not quite as urgent, you could, of course, email the chairs and the staff of the committee, and we can return to this the next time that we meet. So would any member seek recognition at this time?
Ms. Torbett.
Representative Torbett, the gentleman is recognized.
Thank you. We had discussed things county relative. I may need to get some professional help from staff, but I think counties are mandated to complete their budget by a certain physical date of the year, and if we are extending our filing and recovery of revenue to July 15th, I would think it might be appropriate that we allow the county to join that same time period. Also, we passed a bill several years ago that when a individual pays their tax on their vehicle, they are also obliged to pay the registration. They also advise to pay the county tax, but perhaps decouple those, allow the county and the folks a little flexibility with that. Just two thoughts I want to throw out. Thank you.
This is Representative Stevens.
Representative Stevens, the lady is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just following back up on the prison issue, I think one of the concerns that I've heard raised is we're releasing these people. Do we know if they've been tested? Are they testing to see if they are positive for coronavirus before they release them so that the public can know, or that they can know what to do? These are people who may have been dependent on the prison system for their medical care. So are we testing before we send them out?
That concern is certainly noted, and we will ask the department to respond to that. Representative Dahl, the lady is recognized.
I still would like to go back to what we talked about last session. Last time we met with the DMV and the limited driving privilege, as well as whether or not they will have their, because they can't access their driving license back. And these people may be the only driver. And I know they made a mistake. I know that that's problematic, but they may be the only driver in the home. So I'd like to know about, can they have automatic restoration during this time, or a 5-day restoration? Because your pre-trial limited driving license is revoked for a period of, I think, 10 days. And you have to get a substance abuse assessment during that time, but we don't allow those to be done over online, so we can't do them in-house. So how is there any, I don't know who on the staff could look into that or how we could address that. We hope that people are staying home and not drinking and driving, but that is a problem.
To that point, Representative Dahl, I think that you bring up a very good point. We have that would sort of cross the line in a good way between what the court had ordered and what the secretary has authority to do. So I think we need to reach out to the secretary and to our staff and see if these people that may have these limited driving privileges that were set to expire, if that's something the secretary can do, or if we need to have a little bit broader solution. I do think you bring up a very good point. Representative Harrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just to follow up on the present thing, and then I'm going to drop it. This is something that the Attorney General has done at the federal level and many jurisdictions across the country. And I can't remember if I mentioned this in my chat email, but right now our prisons are 3,000, almost 3,000 over capacity, 8% over capacity for the workforce. And this is a safety measure both to the corrections officers and to the individuals who are housed in these institutions, getting potentially exposed to this virus. So that's where that's coming from. And these are very limited releases. And as Representative McNeil mentioned, most of them are within 6 months of their release date, 6 to 8 months of their release date. My question to you, Mr. Chair, was about the elections piece. Just to follow up, are we going to add the out of precinct poll workers and maybe the poll worker pay to the other two proposals? Or at least the out of precinct poll worker piece?
Representative Harrison, let me, if I can, confer with the other chairs and get back with you on the out-of-precinct poll worker part. Say, personally, I think that makes sense. As far as the compensation for them, let's deal with that in the appropriate agencies.
Okay, thank you.
Representative John?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I sent an email to the chairs and staff containing a handful of recommendations for potential legislation as a happy to defer those to the next meeting to give the chairs and staff opportunity to those, and I'm available to answer any questions in regard to those suggestions.
Thank you, sir. We'll certainly review that. Representative McNeil.
Yeah, I just sent a notice to everybody. After our meeting started at 2:45 or so, Susanna Davis with the Department of Public Safety sent out a letter from Secretary Hooks. It's about 2 or 3 pages. Probably answers just about any question you would have about this early release, what they're looking at, who they're looking at. It's very informative. So, just please read her email. It looks to me like she sent it to all legislators, all House and Senate members. So you should have it in your inbox.
All right, any other members seeking recognition at this time? Very good. I think the chairs believe that we have made some good progress today. This will allow us to add items that need to be discussed the next time we meet, and also perhaps to pare down the ideas that were flagged here, and to seek more information from the appropriate agencies and have for you. Chairman Jackson or Chairman Bell, do either of you have anything else to add at this time?
No, thank you.
Maybe we'll be at ease for just a moment. Before we end, staff, do you have any questions that need to be addressed before we things up here.
I think we're good right now, Mr. Chair.
The chair will point out that the speaker has authorized us to meet additionally at times that we need to. And so we may very well meet before next Tuesday. You'll certainly be kept informed about that. Chairman Jackson, I'm sorry if I skipped over you, sir. Did you want to add anything else? Gotcha. Right.
Yes, sir.
Great. Members, on behalf of the chairs and Speaker Moore, we certainly appreciate your time today and your hard work. Everybody staying focused on improving the lives of our constituents during this difficult time. Our staff, thank you for all of your work and your professionalism and helping us move this ball forward. We will report back to you on the information that's been requested. But the chair is aware of no further business before this committee at this time. Chair sees no member seeking recognition. Therefore, the chair declares that this committee stands adjourned.